Uh-oh, you can hear everything. I can't breathe now. I have to be quiet. So, you know, one of the things Geshe-la, I've heard, excuse me, he likes to have the children here, particularly to do mantras, because their karma is so pure that their mantras are more powerful. And that's kind of interesting. So it's nice to have all this pure energy in here with us to get started. Is somebody going to lead the prayers, or is it going to be me? Okay, it's me. All right, so we'll start out. We'll just do the. Yeah, I think we'll do. Okay, and do we do refuge and bodhicitta too, usually? No? Okay. All right, Shakyamuni Buddha, Four Measurables in English. We'll do it in English. And then we'll do Shakyamuni Buddha and Chenrezig and Tara. Chenrezig and Tara. Okay, great. All right, so, by the way, Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra, Taya Ta Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Soha. It's like all the Buddha's teachings kind of like distilled into this mantra. You can think of it like that. Even though you don't get it, probably. Just think of it as being so powerful and so full of the Dharma. So how long do we do it? How many times do we do it?
Three
times. And the other one's what?
The other
one is
seven.
Okay. Okay. Obviously, I'm ill-prepared here. Taya ta om mune mune maha mune soa. Taya ta om mune mune maha mune soa. Taya ta. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now we go to the, I don't know, the bottom of the pink page of the Green Tara and Chenrezig mantras. Somebody help me with the tune. I have so many tunes in my head for this mantra. Om Tu Tari Tu Re Soha. Om Tari 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 Tu Tari Tu Re Soha. Om Ani Padme Hum. 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 Okay. Bye bye. See you all later. Whoa. Well, start out with doing some, let me take this thing off, do some mindfulness of the breath meditation.
Practice you're accustomed to, but we, the Geshe-la,
you're going to have to listen to me breathe. Sorry. All right, so, you know, the nine-round breathing, I like that practice. It's real easy, and Geshe-la's taught it so many times. But it's basically you breathe, you can use your finger, or you can just imagine it, but you just include the left nostril in, out. That's one. Do that three times, and then you occlude the opposite in, out three times, and then in, out both nostrils three times. The idea is just to get the since the mind travels with the breath, so to speak, on the winds of the psychic winds anyway. It helps to settle the mind. So let's do that for a second. And then I'll do a brief motivation, kind of set our intention for this morning. Is it cold in here? Maybe. Okay. As one of my teachers said, that if you spend an hour meditating, you should probably spend about 57 minutes setting the motivation. We're not going to do that, but that's how important it is. Karma, the karmic results of our practice and listening and trying to practice Dharma completely depends on our motivation, so... if you just want to kind of relax and learn how to deal with your day-to-day anxiety, that's okay. It's really an okay reason to be here, and there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody wants to be happy. Another motivation might be like Christian brothers and sisters and Muslims, I think, and other traditions, to have the next life to be better. Like, I want to practice now because I want my next life to be better. And then another motivation, which is even more powerful, is to escape suffering completely. Is to use this life to train our mind in ethics and concentration and wisdom to achieve liberation or nirvana, the total cessation of suffering. And if you got to that, you'd be so happy. You wouldn't believe it. It's worth beyond our wildest dreams for happiness is to achieve nirvana. But then there's one motivation that's even more auspicious and powerful. And that's that we practice for others. That our motivation, our sights are set on helping others. Not some sentimentality, not like that, but really based on a genuine feeling of interconnectedness and warmth and wanting them to be free from suffering and to find happiness. And so we dedicate our practice, we dedicate our whole process of awakening in order to be a service to others. We call that the awakening mind or bodhicitta, different words for that experience. As much as possible, it's not natural to think that way. It's completely antithetical to what our ego wants to do, but that's why it's so powerful. So try to bring to mind whatever experience you can of that motivation. You can relax your concentration. Well, we don't have much time, which is good. We have 26 minutes. So the subject I've already done I already did the matinee an hour ago. So this is the, I guess, whatever. Anyway, the subject is forgiveness. And one of the comments I made, because you just don't see that word in the text, do you? People that went into some of the older students here, you don't see the word forgiveness, even though, you know, when you ask people, well, what's forgiveness? And, oh, yeah, you just forgive. Well, what does that mean? Well, and also, I think it's worth asking, and we'll come back to this, hopefully, if I don't get too spun around, you know, I want you to be thinking, why isn't forgiveness talked about in the text? One of the root bodhisattva vows is not forgiving though someone apologizes. There is that in there. That's like the third root bodhisattva vow, but it's not in there much. But having said that, Geshe Gelug gave me this, and written by the Dalai Lama, and it's about forgiveness. And he said it would be much more constructive if people tried to understand their supposed enemies learning to forgive is much more useful than merely picking up a stone and throwing it at the object of one's anger. The more so when the provocation is extreme, for it is under the greatest adversity that there exists the greatest potential for doing good, both for oneself and others. Dalai Lama. So, and he, there was actually a book written, a Chinese man wrote the book, but, you know, it was based on interviews by the Dalai Lama, and it was the title of the book was Forgiveness, but I just read bits and pieces of it a few years ago, and it was really about mind training. It was about Lojong, about thought transformation. That was the essence of it. So we'll get into that in a little bit, maybe. So let's talk about what, and this is participatory, so I may call people in the back of the room back there to speak up, but what do we mean, what's the word mean, forgiveness? What's the, when we say forgiveness, what does that really mean? Anybody? Let's pass the microphone.
Just come the word, letting go?
Letting go of?
I think it's letting go. Maybe it's your ego because you're trying to feed something. Mm-hmm. When you don't forgive,
mm-hmm.
So if you let it go, that hatred, the anger.
Mm. Okay, I like that. I like that definition of forgiveness. It's letting go of some sort of negative mind state, like anger, resentment, hatred, something that's icky.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who's, why would you, let other people, why would you even want to forgive? Why do you want to forgive? What's the advantage in forgiving? Seems pretty obvious, but maybe not. Yeah. Over there. Okay. Yeah.
For your health.
For your own health. Is that what you said? And so we could say mental and physical health, right? And what does it do? Like if somebody, you know, we could use a lot of juicy examples, but let's just say you did somebody wrong and you apologize. Well, let's say somebody did you wrong and they apologize to you. How does that make you feel? It makes you feel better, doesn't it? Because at least you see that they got it. They feel some regret. So that makes it a little bit easier for me to let go too, right? So apologizing to people is really powerful. And having an apology, you know, somebody apologized to us. I know there's several people out there that have done things wrong to me. I'm still waiting for them to apologize. Otherwise, it's going to be hard to let go. But, yeah, go ahead.
To me, it's like when somebody hurts you or you get angry or hurt, it's almost like you take on luggage, right? And that you have this big, like, luggage every time somebody does something and you hold resentment because, you know, this kind of teaching is kind of tricky because it's all about, really not about them, it's all about you, about why has it affected you and the karmic wheel and getting off of that. And I think forgiveness is a pathway to unloading some of that baggage that we carry mm-hmm. around. And, yeah.
Okay. Now, here's the next question. Why is it so hard to do it? Why do we hang on? I mean, we know that it's just bad for our health, bad for our mental health, bad for our physical health. We know that. And, I mean, that's not a secret. Why do we hold on to it? Why do we find it so hard to forgive people, particularly if it's really been something bad?
Because it's such a good story.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about my past and the times that I didn't even think about forgiveness, but that story just went on in my mind. Oh my gosh, she just did this to me, and how could they do that to me? And you just carry on and on about it. And sometimes it's a lot easier to carry on and on about it than it is to say, whoa, you know, this is gone way beyond what it should be. So it's certainly about my mind and where my mind takes me and how miserable I can make myself in that story.
Yeah.
I mean, if I just let go, it's just like...
We do like to wallow in our drama, don't
absolutely.
We?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, you know, just think how boring life would be. You didn't have anything to talk about except the bad things that people have done to you. How did your day go at school today? Well, let me tell you what so-and-so did, and let me tell you what so-and-so did. I mean, you know, you hear that from kids all the time. Yeah.
One thing I was going to talk about that, just like when you give and people feel good about it, there is some sort of an endorphin that is released, that feel good, and is addicted. And resentment, anger, and feeling a victim is also addictive.
Mm.
And it's a comfort place that you... It's just like doing a diet. You know, it's a comfort place to be just eating.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the other side, too, when you feel that comfortable to just feeling pain and feeling anger.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just to kind of get out of that comfort zone, too.
Right. Yes, I think that's true. You know, one of the people this morning, they said, it's that, you know, we don't want to forgive because our ego wants, it's righteous. We want to be right about everything. And so, you know, it's an ego trip to wallow in self-pity and spin those stories and journal in our mind, you know, for sometimes for days, weeks, could go on for years, you know. You know, it's... So this is a stupid question, but what is forgiveness not? What is forgiveness not? I know the answer to this, but I'm... Yeah.
In my mind, forgiveness is not making things all better. Because while forgiveness... For the person being forgiven, per se, I mean, because sometimes the person being forgiven might not even know that they did anything wrong or that there was anything there, but it is an acknowledgement that the person passing forgiveness has thought about it or has contemplated it. And at least as far as my experience with kids is like, this is the thing that you're like helping them learn, that you are actually making a consideration. But just the mechanics of saying, I'm sorry, or, you know, letting go of it is not making it all better. What it is setting yourself up for having the moment to build regret and to actually contemplate it and to actually eschew yourself into a learning process. But forgiveness in itself is not just saying, well, that's all taken care of.
Yeah. Kids do that a lot, don't they? Go, they do something wrong and they say, oh, I'm sorry. You hear that all the time and they keep right on doing it. Doesn't seem to stop. Is forgiveness forgetting? Is it necessary to forget? It's not a good idea to forget. Hang on, this is Desmond Tutu. This is a quote from the 16 Guidelines book, which is actually quite good on forgiveness. Instead, forgiveness allows us to let go of those destructive attitudes towards the past that condone both the victim and the perpetrator to remain needlessly imprisoned in a cycle of recrimination and guilt. Archbishop Desmond Tutu presided over the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which was set up in 1995 to help South Africans talk about and come to terms with the atrocities that took place during the apartheid era. His conclusion from his experience was that without memory, there is no healing, and without forgiveness, there is no future. Without memory, there is no healing, and without forgiveness, there is no future. That's kind of cool. So we don't have to, you know, it's not that we're saying we're forgetting that so-and-so did this, because that might actually be stupid, because we just set ourselves up for the same thing to happen to us again, maybe. But I think a lot of it is, I think when real forgiveness occurs, that charge that memory has loses its power over us, in a sense. You know, you can remember, for example, so-and-so stole from me, or so-and-so cheated on me. And when you first heard about it, you were outraged. But then, you know, 10 years later, you've thought about it, you've let go, and now you hear about it, there's no charge. There's no charge. And the quicker we can let go of the quicker we can heal. That's really what it's about. The quicker we can heal these memories and diminish the charge, the happier our life is going to be. It's just, there's no doubt about it. Let's see. Oh, being instantly forgiven. How about that one? Your sins are absolved. Go out. I mean, this is part of other traditions, isn't it? It is. I mean, I was raised Presbyterian. You believe in, you know, this, and instantly all of your, we would say from a Buddhist perspective, your karmic slate is clean. Does that, you know, I'm not trying to start a, you know, I'm not trying to be antagonistic, I'm just asking the question. Does that fit anybody's experience? Because if our karmic slate was clean, how would we be, from a Buddhist perspective, how would you behave? First of all, you'd be really joyful, and your behavior would be impeccable. And so, I can tell you, mine have not been absolved.
Well, I think that the cosmology is so, so different that it's almost apples and oranges. That's not fair to, not that it's not fair, because life's not fair, but it's just different thinking. I mean, if you believe that Jesus is the way, and which is amazing for them, you know, because that gives them comfort, then he is so powerful. It's like looking at the stupa that you can't. But it doesn't mean that you continue doing it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the thing. It's like, yes, you can be forgiven, but you don't keep on doing it. And that's a fallacy, I think. And as a seeker, I think that they're so different.
Yeah.
We are very there are similarities, but cosmology, Buddhism is so different.
Yeah. It does give, you know, faithful Christians some peace. It really does give them, you know, my whole family's totally, you know, committed to Christianity, and I think there's something there for them. It just never quite hit for me. I just, you know, how do we, so here's the, I think, what about self-forgiveness? Anybody got any thoughts about that one? Self-forgiveness, because we, you know, we've been talking about forgiving other people, sort of, so to speak, haven't we? What about this one? What about this one? Any thoughts about that? Scott just volunteered, didn't even know it.
I think forgiving yourself can be very important in a lot of situations. I mean, one thing I noticed about myself, and maybe it applies to other people too, the things that really bother me the most when other people do them are weaknesses that I recognize in myself. And I think a lot of times the reason it can be very difficult to forgive someone else is because you're recognizing that flaw in your own character or that flaw in your own mind. And so to forgive that other person means you have to learn to be okay with that too.
Yeah, I have some of this. Like I said, this is not a topic that you're going to pick up. Shanti Dev is not talking about forgiveness, you know, so I'm making some of this up. You better check it out, by the way. But I really think, this is my experience, okay? But I've done some purification practice. I really think that purification practice is a form of self-forgiveness. You know, because if we listen, and I've heard psychologists say this, most of our self-talk is negative. You know, I'm not this, I'm not handsome enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not young enough, I'm not old enough, I'm not skinny enough, I'm too blah, 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 I'm not smart enough, I don't make enough. It's just, you know, there's so much of this, not all of it, but, and not all of us, but if you just take a lot of people and look at the self-talk, we really give ourselves an extremely hard time for not being enough. I'm not good enough. And so I would say that being able to let go of that negative, put down self-talk would be kind of forgiveness. Can you align with that thought? And doesn't it make a little sense? So how do we do that? Because that's really important. And I think Buddhist purification practices really aim at that. You know, like the four punnet powers. And some of you know these, some of you don't, but I'll just go over them really quickly. So, first of all, the first is called the power of reliance, if you're a Buddhist and you're doing this, you rely on the your refuge in the Buddhas, the enlightened beings, the Dharma, the realizations of those teachings, and the Sangha, the spiritual community, and you rely on the power of compassion. Okay, so that's the power of reliance. Then the next one is called the power of the hold on a minute, I'm going to get it. It's another R, regret. You have to regret it, and this calls for brutal honesty. This calls for being brutally honest with ourselves about when we've harmed ourselves or someone else. And so there's a little, at the end of the practice of the 35 Buddhas, there's another Buddhification practice, purification practice using the Buddhas, 35 Buddhas. And at the end of the confession, it says this, if I acknowledge and confess them, that's my negative behaviors, I shall abide in contact with happiness. If I do not acknowledge and confess them, true happiness will not come. So it's really asking, there's really some strong encouragement for us to not gloss over anything, but really to take a hard look at our behaviors, our choices. In fact, every day, you know, but when Venerable Rubina is here, she often says, Lama Zopa says, it would be insane not to, you know, to do some purification practice every night before you go to bed. Think, review your day, look at the things you did well, rejoice, look at the things you didn't do so well, and do some practice to try to clean your mind of the karmic residue as much as you can. So we've got reliance, regret. Then the next one's the power of the remedy, which could be, you know, it could be something, it could be just going, I'm so sorry I did that. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have done that. It could be just something that really heartfelt. You know, it's much more important to have heartfelt, you know, like even saying a little prayer like that than to just prattle off, you know, the 100-syllable mantra 21 times and not really feel that. So I think it could take the form of picking up the phone and calling somebody up and saying, you know, I'm sorry. I really, you know, didn't do it. I didn't do it right. I can do better. Blah, blah, blah. But, you know, really, so that's the power of the remedy. And we often do, you know, one of the things you do, we often do is like the Vajrasattva practice, very powerful one where you imagine Vajrasattva above you and you say the 100-syllable mantra and you envision light and nectar purifying your body, speech, and mind. That's kind of a really nice practice to do before you go to bed, if you know how to do it, or you just maybe do some kind of breathing meditation, whatever you're familiar with. So, or mantras, or there are a lot of things that you can do for the power of the remedy. And then the last one, which is considered, one of my teachers said, is the most important one, to promise not to do it again. The resolve. Like kids go, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I hit her with a stick. I won't do it again. I'm sorry. This is my young. I hit her with a stick. I'm so sorry. I won't do it again. Or I'm yelling. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I go, wait a minute. No. I want you to say you're sorry and you won't do it again for like a minute or 2 minutes or 3 minutes. But give me a time here. So you have to have some. So this is really, really important. You know? It's like alcoholics. They say, okay, one day at a time. I don't want to drink. I'm not going to drink for one day. I'm just going to live this one day sober. And it's very important to make your promise and then to give it, you know, make it real. So I think, again, this whole notion of forgiveness of ourselves and forgiveness of others is all through Buddhism. It's just not used, that language is not used, is it? But it's all there. It's about letting go of self-destructive thoughts and stories and things that are going to damage us. And I'm running out of time, so this is perfect. Let me see if there's anything else I want to say. Oh, last point. Why don't we see this in Buddhist text? Why do you suppose it's not written about, you know, forgiveness so much in Buddhist text? I mean, it's all, like I said, it's all there, but it's not, yeah, in the back.
Because there is no such word as forgiveness, because it's all about anger.
It's what now? Yeah, let go of anger. Well, here's another thought I had about it, and that is that if you did me wrong, okay, you cheated on me or you stole from me. That's a big ego trip, there, isn't it? I am a victim, and in Buddhism, The according to law of causality, everything is just, it just what goes around comes around. So if somebody's stealing from me or cheating on me or doing something to me, it's just the fruit of past actions. It's the personality part, like you are doing this to me, that thing, that whole ego thing. That's not from the Buddhist, you know, from the highest teachings. That I that got insulted and wronged and the stuff, the one that we identify with, is a complete illusion. It's not the truth. And for example, Shantideva in his book Bodhisattva Charivatara, he talks about this process of letting go of anger. If somebody hits you with a stick, you don't get angry at the stick. That's actually the thing that hurt you, wasn't it? You should be mad at the stick. No, we get angry at the person who's holding the stick. In the same way, when we have some experience that's that we call the fruit of past actions. You know, the real source of that pain that we're experiencing is our own self-cherishing, self-centered, egocentric, I'm the center of the universe, the most important one. That mind is the mind that gets angry, jealous, you know, attached, and all the negative karma just spins off of that mind. That's what creates the cause for these billions of karmic seeds to ripen in a moment and see somebody mistreating us. And we want to blame it on them. But the real, this is hard to swallow, particularly if you're new. But the point of Buddhism is if we really take the teachings on cause and effect to heart, there in the world, there are victims that in a relative sense. A small baby who gets, who's killed, that child is a victim. I'm not saying that. But from our own personal perspective of how we view our world, it's much more helpful for us to see ourselves as responsible for everything, all the time. It's the fruit of my own former actions, and I can shape my future based on the decisions I make now. And if I want to be happy, I make good choices. If I want to suffer, I just keep doing what my ego wants to do. And guess what happens? We just get more of the same. So forgiveness is all over Buddhism, but we just don't use that word. We just don't use that word. So thank you. Any last minute questions? Particularly if somebody has a burning question, and I may not be able to answer it, I'll probably give it to Geshe-la. Anything? All right. So good. I'm going to turn the floor over to Miss Sandy, and she's going to talk about, let's put it this way, Kadalba Center is like total volunteer organization, and so we totally depend upon the generosity of all the people who come here and benefit. So Sandy wants to say a few words about that.
Okay, good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Better. My name is Sandy Carlson. I'm the membership coordinator here, but I'm also, today I'm wearing my FDC hat, which is the Financial Development Committee. And one of the things that we're going to do today is we're going to do a little bit of our annual report, kind of the state of Kadampa Center, and then we'll go into a little bit of an explanation about our sustainer drive. So I'm going to introduce Faith Klein, who is the treasurer of Kadampa Center, and she's got her part.
Good morning. So this morning we're going to talk about our financial report. I am the treasurer here, and we've been going over the end of the year budgets and things, see how we planned for this year and how things are coming out. Now, keep in mind, we still have another month before the year's over. But if I could. So I'm presenting to you the raw numbers of the budget and things. Not talking about. Okay, so our annual budget is planned income, planned expenses, results of our annual bill, and all these things combine to create our income here, and that is what funds this facility. Thank you. So just to give you a little information, we are a North Carolina nonprofit corporation, and this facility is managed by Board of Directors, which is led by Robbie Watkins. And then our president of our board is Richard Potter. I'm the treasurer. Then Karen Mastronia is the secretary, and there's six other members. We meet every third Sunday, and this is a Sunday that we are actually meeting to speak about the budget and possibly vote about the budget for 2014. Next slide. Thank you. So for this year, for 2013, there was a total planned income of $187,600. And as you can see, the total planned expenses, we felt like we were in a good place. We were going to come out with a surplus of $2,500. And this is what we call the unrestricted budget and doesn't include special projects or stupas or things like that. So this is the income, and it's kind of just breaking down the percentages of how we have income and in what categories that income comes in. So if there's any questions about this, please feel free to ask. But it's pretty self-explanatory where the majority of the money comes from up here, which would be the annual appeal to members. And this is just a slide that illustrates some of our incredible special events that go on here, some of the visiting teachers. This is the expenses that are in our budget. And as you might imagine, staffing is the largest expense. We are in the new budget proposing an increase in benefits and pay and trying to bring on some new staff. So we do expect this number to get much larger with our growth, and that is in support of the growth of this facility. So if anyone has any questions about the rest of the expenses, it's basically like your home expenses. We have a mortgage. We have, you know, materials for certain pujas and retreats and things that are expensive, and then we have different projects. So the 2013 pledge goal was $108,000, and the total pledge that was received, is that correct? Was 113? Yeah. Mm-hmm. 113. Pledged was 113. So thank you. And we do really depend on pledges as our income here. So thank you all for helping to assure the future of Kadampa Center by doing that. And this is the actual income and expense list. So when you take the entire year and you total the income that we actually have and you total the expenses, as you can see, when you budget for something, it is just an imaginary number. You use it to try to forecast. But this is actual year end. So as you can see, we have a $16,000 deficit here. Our expenses have increased, and we do have a checking account balance of $38,097, which is good. It's really best to keep about 6 months of expenses on hand, so that would be a future goal in the next budget. We'll try to account for that sort of thing. Next slide, please. Thank you. So this deficit is $16,000. It's concerning, but it's something that when you budget, there will always be unexpected expenses, and you just use that information going forward into the next year to try to budget better. The cash on hand is at a good level. However, we prefer, as I said, to have 6 months on hand. And this is an error. I thought we were in 2015 coming up. Got ahead of myself. The 2014 budget will be presented to the board today, and it does take into consideration the change in healthcare laws, increasing health care for the staff, improving benefits, pay, things of that nature, and then just our regular expenses that increase. So we do expect a bigger budget next year to be anticipated. And if there are any questions about the financial presentation I've just given, please feel free to ask. And if not, I will just hand this over to Sandy.
Thank you. I'm going to apologize right now for a couple of the slides that are coming up because different versions of PowerPoint collided this morning. Hilarious. As I said, I'm working, wearing the hat today of the Financial Development Committee, and I want to kind of do a little bit of a history for those of you that have been here. Can advance one. In the past, okay, for those of you, you're going to recognize this graphic from last year's annual appeal. In the past, the annual appeals have really tried to reach only about 55 to 60% of our operating costs. And then we are usually working on the rest of the costs through some of the different opportunities that we have to sponsor different things, okay? So we've always been trying to overcome some things. So we're changing our model this year. In fact, we're gonna try to start looking at things a whole new way. All right.
This year, we're going to be switching to what's called a sustainer model, the sustainer commitments. And what that means is that we're going to ongoing commitments that we all make through our credit cards or bank draft, okay, so that it's actually pulled, okay? You still have control of it. You can stop it and start it whenever you choose to. You get to set the amount. But this way, we can count on what's going on. So this will happen. Sustainer commitments happen through pulls from your bank account or your credit cards. Next. Okay, what are the benefits of that? Why do we go to that? Because it's going to help us have a much better idea of how the funding will flow, how cash flows, and what's going to be available to the center from month to month. Also, a future goal is to be able to have a few less frequent asks. Okay, it will definitely benefit the center as we're growing, and you can see the growth. You can see the growth in the amount of people that we have coming. You can see the growth in the children's program. You can see the growth in all of the different opportunities that we have. So it's just trying to help us get our financial planning and the growth of the center from looking at where we're going in reactive mode to trying to plan for the future a little bit more. Now, there will be opportunities when we have visiting teachers, pujas, and retreats. We're always going to have the opportunity to make personal sponsorships of these things because that allows us to have that personal connection with these awesome teachers. That's a very important part of what Canopus Center offers. So that will always be here. There will always be those opportunities for all of us to have those direct personal connections to our teachers and our Sangha. Now, aspirations. Coming to Canopus Center and working the way that we do and practicing the way that we do, we all understand aspirations. We have aspirations for Buddhahood, aspirations for happiness and freedom from suffering. Well, we have aspirations to reach a 200,000-plus goal. And while that sounds like, wow, we took a real big jump there, didn't we? You know what? If we don't aspire, you know, we're not challenging ourselves to do this. So think of it as a growth model. Think of it as, you know, these are the things that we need to do to help continue this awesome center, the teachings, all of the things that we have to do, and to be able to offer this all free of charge. We don't charge dues or anything. So this is one way that we're able to continue making sure that the Dharma is available to all. Football analogy, we are in a rebuild. This is aspirations. It's probably going to take us a few years to get here, to be able to reach that 100% of our operating costs. So bear with us as we continue to grow. Bear with us as we continue to try to do these asks to get us to that place where we can focus on some other things. So hopefully we're thinking it may take us 2 or 3 years to be able to reach that 100% of our operating costs through this new model. Now, how do we get there? This is kind of that one chart, one way to think about it that we thought might make it a little bit easier for people. Okay, if your monthly donation was about $25 and we had 19 sustainers that gave that, their annual totals would be close to $6,000. All right, if you could give at $150 a month, you know, 14 of those sustainers at that level would give us $25,000 over the course of the year. So you can see how that would grow. If we had even two sustainers give it $1,000 a month, that's $24,000. So this is just one combination of how to reach that 200-plus goal and how to reach that 150 sustainers. So one of the ways to look at this is think about what we normally give during the course of the year. You know, I can stop and I can think about, okay, I gave for this, I gave for this, I gave for that. I tried to, you know, whenever I had cash with me, which wasn't often, to put that in the donable. So I was, you know, I've got kind of a running total in my head. Now take that number, divide it by 12, and see what you could possibly give as a sustainer. And then that way at the center, if we all did that kind of model, then we could have a better plan. Okay? This is one of my font issues. One of the things that we all do, it's not only about the financial gifts that we're all able to do, but it's also that gift of time, effort, all of the volunteers that we do, that energy that we give here. We are a very thriving community. I think you all can see it. I think it's really important to always remember that that's part of our center, too. So it's trying to think about what we can do. What do we give of time? I've heard time, treasure, talent are some of the words that I've heard. But try to think about where you could maybe fit in there. You should have received the sustainer letters. You can go online and become a sustainer online. We have the forms out here. If you have any questions, everybody in the Financial Development Committee, could you raise your hands?
There's a few of them. I think there's more people outside waiting. If you've got questions, please ask us, and we can help you with anything that you've got going on there. Pretty soon, the board is going to be meeting. They're going to be approving the 2014 budget. At that point, we can put some actual real numbers out there. But we are looking for about $200,000, and then there will be opportunities to make up the difference in the operating costs through some of the other opportunities of giving that we'll have. But the center is growing. We're doing phenomenal. Let's keep those aspirational wishes coming and then do what we can to actually make it happen. Okay? Does anybody have any questions? Sometimes I just feel like I la, 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 la. Okay. Well, I'm going to turn it back to Don for the dedication. Did you dedicate or did you wrap this up? I think this kind of brings it around full circle because Don is one of the founding members here. So he saw the center back when it was throughout the whole growth. I think there's many, many members here that have been here for quite a long time. We see, you know, myself, I've only been a member here for about 4 years, but just to be able to go back and see that history of all the things everybody has done before us to bring us to this point. And so trying to think again of that aspiration of where we can take this in the future, that's on us. So I think that we have some opportunities to learn from those who came before us, and I do appreciate that very much. Thanks.
Also, remember Kadampa Center in your will. It could be a sweet way to help the center when you're no longer around. Then, as Susan Potter mentioned, I didn't hear her speak. I heard we hear next life. I want it too. I want it to be here in my next life. So that's something else to think about. So we'll do the pink sheet. I get so confused. Somebody help me here. Do we just do the pink sheet? All of everything on the pink sheet? Pardon? Yeah. Okay. Right, all the way down. Yeah, and then okay, got it. All right, so. May all beings everywhere, plagued by the sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness enjoyed by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see found, and deaf hear sounds. His bodies and horns be worn with toil, be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food, thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and make people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space endures, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain, to dispel the miseries of the world. This land circled by snow mountains, you're the source of all happiness and good. For Chinrezig, Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland's teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion, to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatare, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornament of the Yellowhead tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Nanjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers, honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and our disciples. Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re Soha.
Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re Soha.